Second parak of Avos, Mishnah Tezvav. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Ayin Hara, the Yetzer Hara, the Sinas Habrios, Motzianas Adam Min Ha'olam. There are three things that take a person out of this world, and there are other places where we have that expression with different things by different opinions. Rabbi Yeshua says the three things that will just take you away from the world is Ayin Hara, Yetzer Hara, and Sinas Habrios, hatred among people. And the Rabbeinu Yoina explains that Ayin Hara refers to the person who is not Sameach B'chalko. He is unhappy with his lot, he looks at what other people have, and he craves what they have. When will he become wealthy like them? And it causes harm to himself and to others. Like the Chachmei HaTeva say, this is something, I guess, in Ben Yonah's time, this was accepted scientific fact. If a person wants what his friend has, avir olam min ha-machshava hayi, it creates some kind of air, some kind of aura, comes out of that thought, and it burns up the things that his evil eye looks at, and it also burns up internally that which, because he had this desire and he can't attain it, and it's self-destructing. And the machshava is makalkel his guf, and it'll literally take him out of this world. That's the ayin hara that Yeshua was referring to, as opposed to the previous mission that said ayin ra, ayin tova. This is something else. This is ayin hara that is a destructive force in the universe. The concept of ayin hara, the way Chazal described it, is a little different than the way we think of it. We kind of think of it as a superstitious thing, and people say "Kan ayin hara," which is the abbreviation of "there should be ayin hara." Among Sfardim, they may say "Ben Prad Yosef Ali Ayin," because Yosef Etzadik was above ayin hara. But the Chazal treated ayin hara as a legitimate, serious, harmful thing, to the point that there's a Gemara above Metzia that says that Rav went to the cemetery, and it doesn't describe what he did. It just says, Ovid Maida Ovid. He did what he did, and there's a question of what exactly he did, but basically, at the cemetery, he inquired of all the corpses of the deceased how they died, what caused their death. And Rav testified that 99 of 100 died by Ayin Hara. 99 of 100 in the cemetery are there due to Ayin Hara. So there is this destructive force called Ayin Hara. And the Rebbe Yehuda describes it. It originates in a person who's dissatisfied with his lot. He wants what other people have, and he doesn't have it. Now, I would have said in simple terms, that's called kinna. Right? Kinna is jealousy. Jealousy is, or envy, wanting what others have and you don't have. And we know the Pasuk says, Rekabat Samos Kinna. Kinna will make the bones rot. People who are jealous are miserable people. They are not happy people. And whether it takes on a physical dimension or not, we can discuss, and maybe it causes stress and I don't know what else. But clearly, from a Chazal's perspective and the Pasuk in Mishlei, it rots the bones. And it goes so far as to say, Gemara, that they were digging, they're doing an excavation in a field, and they came across a body, and they wanted to know. It was a whole discussion. The body was talking to them. It was a whole story in the Gemara. And they said, why didn't you decompose? He says, what do you mean? If I'm not jealous in my lifetime, I'm not going to decompose in the grave. Decomposition comes from jealousy. So maybe that goes back to 99 of the 100 in the cemetery said the Ayin Hara did them in. Maybe it wasn't even that they had Ayin Hara. They were victims of Ayin Hara. Maybe they had Ayin Hara to other people. Yeah.
It's kind of off topic, but it just reminded me. I heard somewhere once that you're not supposed to look at gravestones.
Yeah, there is. I believe it's in Arizal not to read the gravestone. And the Svarm teach us it means upraised letters. That's why the letters in a tombstone are always embedded. I don't know if you noticed that or not. How often girls go to cemeteries? Men go pretty often. Or relatively, whatever it is, the way we do a stone, a marker, is we engrave in the stone. It's not raised letters. So there are those who say it means raised letters. There are some who put pictures on the stones, and that, I think, according to the result, is not a good thing. But so, in, you know, if you've never seen a picture in an old cemetery with a picture on a grave. They make engravings of that things, but I've seen pictures of the deceased in more contemporary stones. That's not our Messiah. We don't do pictures of the deceased, and we don't do raised lettering. We do the engraved lettering.
Why is that?
I don't know. This is beyond my scope. When you turn 40, one day we'll come. It's beyond my scope. So anyways, the point of Yeshua is saying is Ayin Hara is a terrible thing. And he's discussing the person who wields the Ayin Hara. Now, there's always a lesson that we should not create Ayin Hara. We try to avoid situations where we make other people envious. And this really runs contrary to the society in which we live. We live in a society where it's a goal and it's an ideal to make everyone else envious of you. I've heard advertisements, get these windows, it'll be the envy of the neighborhood, get this lawn furniture, and on and on. Whatever they're trying to sell, the selling point is, if you have this and your neighbors don't, everyone will be envious of you. From a Torah perspective, you run the other way if that's the selling point. If they want to convince you that you have this, everybody envious of you, then don't get it. That's telling you stay far away from this thing. If this is the car that'll turn everyone's head, don't get that car. And so on and so forth, whether it's an outfit or jewelry or whatever it is. If it's something that other people will be envious of, you don't want it. We try not to create envy in others. It's like almost a goal that a person has to think about before they make a purchase, before they do something. And it's very interesting, Chamavad Yosef, in his discussion on this Mishnah says, does that mean a person who's an eloquent speaker shouldn't give talks, shouldn't give speeches, because people say what a weak speaker is, and it's so uplifting, and maybe because Ayin Hara. Ayin Hara doesn't have to come through a malicious intent. Ayin Hara will come whether it's malicious or not. And therefore, maybe he's going to stay away, and he goes and say, no, person's doing a mitzvah, you do a mitzvah, you do it right, and don't worry about it. You know, if you do a mitzvah, don't worry about the mitzvah you're doing. But if it's not a mitzvah, is when you have to start thinking twice about, is this something that will stand out? Is this something which would be considered ostentatious? Is this something that other people will be envious of? And you have to be very careful with that. Yeah.
So my original question was sort of like that one. How far can you extend a mitzvah? Like, let's say you get a job and someone's asking you about it, and then they're telling you they're so jealous that you got this job, they still want to know about it. Can you extend your job as a mitzvah because you're your family?
Yeah, one could say a job is a mitzvah. You're not going to not take a job because someone else might feel bad that they didn't get the job. And you're not going to not get engaged because someone else will be chas v'shalom envious that they're not engaged. And so on, it goes on with everything, with marriage and having children. You can't not do that. But that doesn't mean you drive around with a car that says a bumper sticker that my son is in the honor roll of whatever. there's a difference, right? So there are certain things you're going to do. You're going to live your life and serve Hashem. You're going to do your mitzvahs, do what you're supposed to do. And we hope other people work on themselves and won't have this. But at the same time, we're not going to do things like in your face, so to speak. We're not going to flaunt it. That would be inappropriate. We don't want to do that.
If someone tells you they're jealous of you, is that, in a way, because they're telling you, you kind of can't take it seriously because then they're not, it's not malicious because they're obviously close enough to tell you. But at the same time,
the only jealousy that we could tolerate, perhaps, is kinas seifim. But if it's not kinas seifim, that's not a good thing. If so, I don't know how you would respond to someone that says, see, that they're jealous of you. See, that's terrible. Do you want them to sit together with me? I don't know what you would tell them. Yeah.
But what if it's something, a good thing?
What?
You get a job, and they're jealous of you. They should also get a job. It's
a good thing. So they say, don't be jealous. Message them. You'll get your, it's coming to you too.
So at what point is it considered like flaunting though? Because like this is a little bit of a personal example, but like I really like to draw, and it's not like I'm doing it for my job or anything. I do it for fun. I take classes for it, and I really like the stuff I make. So am I like not allowed to show it to people? Because I don't know if they're going to get jealous or not. I know there are some people who like really want to be able to do that stuff.
Well, there are artists who sell their work. I don't think that's, you know, flaunting. They have a talent and they do it.
I'm doing it just for fun.
People who are talented don't have to take their talents and ignore them or not develop them. But you should do them for good things, and maybe one day you'll be designing windows and shuls, and who knows what you could do with your talents.
There's a difference between talents and stuff, between like being a really good artist and then driving around in like the fanciest car. I feel like there's a big difference between those.
Yeah, there is. I think there is a difference.
Right,
it could be lawn furniture or new windows in your house, but it's according to, or the lawn, your lawn over the end, whatever it is that they're trying to sell you on. You know, you could live an ordinary menschlich life and not create envy. But I will add that there's some doctor, I'm assuming psychologist, I don't remember, it was so many years, a fellow wrote a book called Envy. Studying envy. Why are people envious? Can we ever create a society without envy? And his conclusion was that it's impossible. And it's fascinating that his trial case out of his experiment was done for him in Israel on the kibbutz, where the kibbutz was created where everything is the same. The children are raised communally. No one has more than anyone else has. They dress the same. They have the same homes, the same everything. Everything is identical. And you would think in that society, there'd be no jealousy. And what they found is there was jealousy. What they're jealous of? Whose son rose higher in the ranks in the military? Which division in the army was he picked? Was he a paratrooper? Was he a pilot? They found things to be envious of, even though they really don't merit envy. And he said, evidently it's a human condition. People will find things to be envious of. And they will be envious. Now, that's a world without Musar. That's a world without working on yourself. These were secular people. He's just saying, the idea that you could make a utopia where everyone's the same and you'll eliminate envy is not true. It does not eliminate envy. There's still going to be envy, still going to be jealousy. He goes, historically, he says, those who were accused of being witches and killed for it were usually the victims of envy. Everyone else's crops failed and theirs didn't. Must be your witch. Everyone else got sick in this disease and lost someone in the family. Your family didn't. Must be your witch. Whatever it was that people were envious of, the target of their envy must be magic, whatever
it's
it is.
Not with the Jews. Whenever the Jews get ahead and start doing stuff,
like, it's
the Jews' fault because,
Well, that could be too, but in the context of Ayin Hara or Kinnah, this is a very old phenomenon, and again, the way we learn Chumash with Midrashim, with Tarash Baal Peh, the Nachash was envious of Adam and Chava. And Kinnah goes back to the Nachash Kadmoni in Gan Eden. Now, it's old Kinnah. It's been around for a long time. And as soon as Chava eats from the Eitz Hadas, the first thing is, I'm going to die and he's going to marry somebody else? That can't happen. I have to give him to eat too. Right away, she has Kinnah. As soon as she eats from the Eitz Hadas, tell everybody, she has Kinnah. What's going to happen? I'll die from eating it and he's going to marry someone else. So, Kinnah's been around since Bereishis. And what we have to know is that it's destructive. It's destructive for those around us. It's destructive for ourselves. No good is ever achieved by being miserable of not having and not achieving. A person has to be Sameach B'Chalko. Now, you have to work on it? Yeah, you have to work on it. People have to work on being a Sameach B'Chalko. People have to work on being happy with what they have, count their blessings. Some people can make lists. You know, you make a list of what you don't have, make a list of what you do have. The people who... I've heard people say, why can't I win the lottery? Why can't I this? And I say to them, you know, there are other lotteries besides money. Nebuch, there are people who get sick. Baruch Hashem, you didn't get that lottery. And there's just so many other things that we didn't get harm from, which is the odds are more than 1 in 100 million, whatever the odds are for the lottery. The point is, we don't appreciate what we have. We don't take stock of Hashem's gifts to us. We don't take the time to enjoy what Hashem has given us, instead of worrying about what other people have and what I don't. There's so much you can focus on what you do have. There's a number of sforim that are currently being printed from the Terev Yaakov Galinsky, and he says in one of these books that when he was 8 years old, he got potched once from his parents. He remembers, one time a slap when he was 8 years old. Why did he get slapped? Because he looked at his sister's dinner serving. He didn't even say, Shandy got more than me. Just looking at someone else's plate, he got a smack. Don't look at other people's faces, plates. That's what he was told. Don't look at other people's plate. You look at your plate. And he remembers that's worth a patch. That's worth a patch. When he was 8 years old, he was taught, you don't look at what other people have. Look at what you have. Appreciate what you have. Don't worry about what other people have. It sounds almost foreign to us, like alien. But this is what we're trying to be taught, that approach with Samech B'chalko. Don't look at what other people have. Don't be upset about what other people have. You have to appreciate what you have and count your blessings. The scary thing about Ayin Hara is, like we mentioned before, it doesn't only come with malicious intent of someone who's disgruntled or unhappy. It could come from people who are close to you. It could come from people who love you. And it could even be self-inflicted. According to Rabbeinu Bechaya, Leah Imenu gave herself an Ayin Hara. She had Reuven and Shimon and Levi and Yehuda, and each one, there's a reason for the name. You get to Yehuda, now I'm going to thank Hashem. I have more than my chelik, Rashi says. There are four wives, 12 children, each should have three. I have four. Hapam oides Hashem, says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, the pasuk, she stopped having kids. She couldn't have any more kids after that. He says it was an Ayin Hara. She gave herself an Ayin Hara by naming her fourth child Yehuda. Now it's a beautiful thing to name a child Yehuda, giving thanks to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hodah to Hashem. It's a wonderful thing. She gave herself an Ayin Hara by expressing it that now I have more than I should have. Okay, that's it. Stopped having kids. Eventually she did have more. She had to give her maidservant and the whole, it was a whole thing till she had more children. But she gave herself an Ayin Hara. So it's the kind of thing that it, from Chazal's perspective, again, we tend to think of it as a superstition, and perhaps on our low level, that's all it has become. But there is such a concept, and certainly the lesson is that we should try to just melt into the crowd and not to stand out. Yeah.
Isn't that humility, though? I mean, we don't deserve anything. So if we're not grateful, then we're just, I don't know.
You're saying the opposite of jealousy is humility?
No, with Leah. Like if we don't give thanks, then we're just being like, it's all coming to me. We don't deserve anything. She was saying she didn't deserve it.
So that's true of Reuven and Shimon and Levi also.
So she has to be consistent, basically.
We use the name, it's a beautiful name. Some want to say we are Yehudim based on Yehuda. It's very significant to Judaism, the idea of a Yid. All it comes from Yehuda. But at the same time, the Korach Rabbeinu Bechai, she gave us a Ayin Hara. So we have to, we try to be careful. You know, there are, I don't know if you've ever met a woman like this, a European type Bobby, and there aren't so many left. They walk down the street and see a lady pushing a stroller or a baby carriage, and they look in there and say, ah, what an ugly baby. And the mother who's uninitiated starts to cry, like, you know, she's trying to say it's an adorable baby, but doesn't want to say it, doesn't give an Ayin Hara. So instead of saying what an adorable, cute baby, they say what an ugly baby. And that's their way of avoiding it.
I've seen people, though, before who, like I met someone once who, like, talked to their kids like that all the time. And I don't think that's right either. Like, I don't think that's going to help. You're not going to give your kid an Ayin Hara, fine, but, like, you're going to give them other issues, but not an
Ayin Hara. I think you're probably right. That's why the rest of us just say an Ayin Hara. Bli Ayin Hara, and we're satisfied with that. There are other expressions too, depending on where you come in the world. You know, we're from with Kanayin Hara, Liayin Hara. I used to hear from some Europeans, Umberufen. There was another expression that would say the same concept of Liayin Hara. We don't want to create Ayin Hara, so maybe it's an expression of Ayin Toiva to someone else, and we're like almost like saying a tefillah that this should not bring any bad results to this. Maybe that's the concept. But ultimately, it is a force. And it is a force, and that's why we always have to think in terms of trying to be, I guess normal is the right way to say it, just to try to not stand out. That doesn't mean you can't be an individual. It doesn't mean that you have to live on a kibbutz, because it won't help. That's not the point. But certainly working on Simech B'chalko, and trying not to engender jealousy in others is an important thing. The second thing Yeshua said was Yetzer Hara, which is obvious, and Sinas Habrius, that if people can't get along, so that will also take a person out of this world. And the Gemara teaches us that the Yetzer Hara tries to overcome us on a daily basis. And if the Baruch Shalom would not help us, we would be incapable of withstanding the Yetzer Hara's attempts to make us stumble. So essentially, as strong as we think we are, we're fragile. And we need a Kaddish Baruch Hu's help. And in fact, every morning we say a tefillah. I'm assuming you say it after the Baruch Hu's HaShachar, that Hashem should help us, prevent us, stay by Yetzer Hara, and just give us a hand, because we know that alone it's not something we could handle. And the Gemara goes so far as to tell us that David and Melech thought that he could, and the Baruch Hu showed him that he couldn't. So we really, no matter what level we're on, the Yetzer Hara adjusts accordingly. It's a zelu umazeh. The greater the person, the greater is Yetzer Hara. And we need the Baruch Hashem's help to overcome the Yetzer Hara. The Gemara goes on to say that one of the potent weapons to fight the Yetzer Hara is Torah. Barasi Yetzer Hara, barasi lo Torah tavlin. If a person knows that Yetzer Hara takes him out of the world, then the vitamin to fight Yetzer Hara is Torah. Rabbi Saul Salanter took it literally to the extent that he felt women are obligated to learn Musar the same as men, even though he says women are putter from Talmud Torah. There's no question women are not obligated to learn Torah, but they have to learn Musar, he says. Because there is no way in this world you'll conquer the Yetzer Hara without Musar. And women have a Yetzer Hara, like men have a Yetzer Hara. So women have to learn Musar too. That's how Rabbi Saul Salanter writes it. It's well known that the Vilna Gaon had a different twist on this, and he felt that Torah is the antidote to Yetzer Hara for men, and Tzniut is the antidote for the Yetzer Hara as far as women are concerned. That is the way that women combat Yetzer Hara is through Tzniut, and the way men combat it is through Torah. But there is no question that Torah helps for women as well. The Ben Ish Chai, Yosef Chaim from Baghdad, explain the marshal of how we should try to handle or manhandle the Yetzer Hara. And he begins, interestingly, with a Gemara that asks, why is it that goats walk ahead of the flock of sheep? When you have a flock of sheep, the goats go in front and the sheep go in the back. And it was basically accepted that goats were dark-haired and sheep were white. Rarely you get a black sheep, that's why the expression is that. Typically sheep are not black, goats are typically dark. So the Gemara says it's like debris of the world. First it was Choshech, then it was Or. So that's like there's dark before light, the dark animals, the goats, go ahead of the sheep. That's what the Gemara says. The Chidah explained that the goats represent the Yetzer Hara. And the lamb is represented as the Yetzer Tov. You know, Klai Yisrael is described in terms of a seh, as far as a lamb. And we know that goats are associated with Yetzer, even in other cultures. The goat head somehow represents demons or demon worship or whatever it is. The goat has that status. And the Chidah explains that the Yetzer Hara goes first because Yetzer is very powerful, very strong. And the sheep go second. They're much more tender and fragile. And from the time a child is born, he already has a Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Tov only comes when he's bar mitzvah, bas mitzvah. So that's how it is. The Yetzer Hara comes first, and the Yetzer Tov comes second. And little children have a Yetzer Hara, do not have a Yetzer Tov. We train them, and we mechanech them to do mitzvahs. But as far as Yetzer Tov is concerned, according to the Svarim, Yetzer Tov only comes by bas mitzvah. So, the Ben Ish Chai wants to explain the pasuk min hakvasim u'min ha'izim tikachu, that we use both lambs and goats for avodas Hashem, for kabanos. We don't differentiate between the two. So, what does it mean we're taking the Yetzer Hara with the Yetzer Tov? So, he says a very interesting mashal. He says, once upon a time, the Yetzer Hara meets up with the Yetzer Tov. And he says, you know, why are we fighting so long? Why are we doing battle? He brings the Pasuk, I don't know if you remember the Pasuk, HaLenetzach Teichel Cherev. Anyone remember who said that? Any pluses for Sabtanach? HaLenesech Teuchel Cherev was... No, HaLenesech Teuchel Cherev was after Shaul had died and Avner created a Malchus for Ish-Boshes, so he and David's general Yoav had skirmishes, and there was this terrible battle by the Parecha in Givon, and after Avner's men were beaten, he says to Yoav, HaLenesech Teuchel Cherev, what that sword will consume forever. So the Ben Ish Chai says, D'Yetzirah says to Yetzirah, what, HaLenesech Teuchel Cherev? Let's make Shalom. Why do we have to fight so long? Let's make Shalom between us. So, how are we going to make Shalom? So Yetzirah says, I'll tell you what. Let me invite your people to a Suda, and I just want to talk to a Chassid. And the Yetzirah says, fine, we can make Shalom. You take the Chassid and leave everyone else alone. We're going to make this big party, and everyone will come, and the Yetzirah will only bother one Chassid of the group. And do what you want to do. So this Chassid would sit and learn, and he was a big masmid, and the Yetzirah leaves him. Yetzirah leaves him. Yetzirah abandons him. The Yetzirah abandons, and the Yetzirah comes in. And the Yetzirah says, you know, why don't we go one time to a cafe? Let's go one time to a theater. Ben Ish Chai lived in the early 1900s. Let's go to a place of entertainment, a few hours, and then you go back home. So the chassid is wondering, why am I thinking these things? I've never in my life thought of going out, going to a thing like this. Why all of a sudden do I have such an interest? But he does. He goes to the cafe, and he sees people sitting around playing sheshbesh, which we call backgammon. He goes into this cafe, and everyone is playing backgammon. And they're playing, and they're getting into it, and each one calls out, and they're discussing, I don't know, he's got something in Arabic, I'm not sure what it is, but betting on it, I'm not sure. And it's noisy, and it's ruckus, and they go order their coffee or tea, and they bring it, but they're so busy playing, they ignore their drinks, and it sits on the table next to them, and it sits there and gets cold, and they're busy playing, and just watching the game. And finally, it's a few hours, and the chassid is exhausted, and he goes back home, and the Yetzirah wants to see. So, what did I gain by having him? Sit for a couple hours in the cafe? And the chassid goes home, and he sits on the floor, and he starts to cry and cry, and he's saying slichus tikkun chatzos, like unlike any ever before. And his wife hears him crying, and she comes in and says, I don't understand, why are you crying so much? And he said, all my gold is false, all my silver is counterfeit, I've tested it, and it's nothing, and that's why I'm crying. Just gold? Silver? What gold is silver? You don't have gold, you don't have silver. What are you talking about? What's counterfeit? So he says, my gold and my silver is Torah and mitzvahs. And I was very happy. I thought I had amassed tremendous Torah and mitzvahs. And they called it gold because the pasuk says, "Hanechmod mizahav mipazrav." It's more desirous than gold and precious metals. So I thought, there's nothing like my learning. But now I went out, and I see it's nothing. It's zero. I go to this cafe, and I see how excited people are over backgammon. And I'm not that excited over my learning. And the coffee and tea just sits there, gets cold. And mine doesn't. If I want a coffee or tea when I'm learning, I drink it hot. And I see that I don't put my energy into my learning like they put their energy into their games. And that's why I'm crying. And from that time on, he had more hislavus and more passion, and more his learning was better, his davening was better, everything was better. So the Yetzirah is watching all this, and he's very upset. And he says, This is what kind of deal was this? He's cursing himself. I wish I never made a deal with you. I wish I never made try to make compromise with you. And the tshuva, so to speak, or the hislavos that the chassid had from the Yetzer Hara outdid what the Yetzer Tov could have done. So the Ben Ish Chai says that's what it means. Take the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara to serve Hashem. There's a concept of taking the Yetzer Hara to serve Hashem too, in this context. Of you see what people do and people run and people get excited about. We have to do that for Torah mitzvahs also. We have to take that excitement level, that passion that people have over total silliness. Right? How many people are going to spend their Sunday this coming week watching a football game with nothing in the world is dead to them? Is that how we are when we learn Torah, when we dive and we do mitzvahs? That's a limit for us. The limit is to take the Yetzer Hara and use it to be stronger. So he says, that's Pshat. When Yaakov said, after living all those years with Lavan, in Lavan Garti, Rashi says, Tarig Mitzvah Shamarti V'lo Lamarti Ma'aseh Haroim. I stayed by Lavan all these years. I didn't learn from him. Yaakov was upset that even though I kept Tarig Mitzvah, why didn't I do it with the same hislavus and simcha that love did as my simbron? So I have to do tshuva. It's a different twist on it. He was saying I have to do tshuva that I didn't learn from him how to do my tayyag mitzvahs with the same level of passion that love did his averus. So it's a different spin on how we're supposed to approach Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara, obviously, on a simple level, tries to take us out of this world. But we have to know that there's a place for Yetzer Hara. And the place for Yetzer Hara is for us to grow and use our energies to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And finally, Sinas HaBrius. Chavad Yosef points out, and you should stay away from Sinas HaBrius. That means not just to be Sone Chotim or Apikorsim. That's not what it says. Person has to have avas abrius and stay away from sinas abrius. And we're not going to differentiate. We're not going to make different madrigas of people. We're going to approach all people the same. So the three things Rabbi Yeshua points out, a person to stay away from is ayin hara, yetzer hara, sinas abrius. Now I want to mention one more thing about Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua, who said this, was extremely poor. He was extremely poor. The Gemara says that he was a blacksmith. And he had several disagreements with Gamliel. Gamliel came to his house to ask Mechila one time. And he says, from the walls of your house, I can tell you're a blacksmith. Because he had no one to support him. He had to be self-sufficient. And Yeshua said, how can you be a leader of the generation and not understand what the other people are living like? Just because you live in a palace and you're a Nasi, whatever it is, you have to know what's going on. You have to know how other people are living. You have to be aware. And he did not have. The Mishnah is telling us that wasn't an issue. You have to be sameach with what you have. You have to be satisfied with what you have. And you have to love everyone the same and stay away from sinna and stay away from yetzer hara, stay away from ayin hara. And those are the things that make a person's life unlivable, so to speak. There is a very well-known chapter in the Michta Melio, in the first volume, where he talks about why people are so miserable, why people are so unhappy. As a whole, people are generally disgruntled and unhappy. And why is that? Did Rosh Hashanah create a world for people to be unhappy? And Rav Dessler says it's because people are not behaving the way Chazal tells us we're supposed to behave, the way the Torah instructs us to behave. And he basically says, Kina Taiv and Kavod, Matsinas Adam and Oilam. It's Kina Taiv and Kavod, the pursuit of things you don't have, jealousy, pursuit of desires that are unattainable, Taivus, and Kavod, power, prestige, the important. These are the things that make people unhappy in life because they are unachievable. They'll never satisfy all their desires. Whatever they have, they want more. They'll never have everything that someone else has. It's not something that you will attain. And therefore, people are miserable. The person who is wealthy, the person who's happy is the person who is Sameach B'chalko. The concept of Sameach. Not caring what other people have, not wanting what other people have, and basically not living a life to indulge yourself, not pursuing honor and respect. If a person lives like that, they won't be miserable. They'll be very happy. So ultimately, you know, the pursuit of happiness is in everyone's control. What they don't realize is it's something you have to work on internally. It's not something you attain through purchases, through things. You don't need items or things to be happy. A person has to understand that it comes from within. And it comes from staying away from kinna, taiva, kava, these things that Rishu was describing. These are things that make life unpleasant, miserable. And this, the interesting, again, like we said before, Chazal say it even has physical dimensions, which, again, you could say today it means people are stressed out and people have hypertension, and maybe this is a cause as well. I wonder how many people would reconsider their career moves if they put it in the context of their physical health or the toll it took on their physical health. As people make decisions in life, and sometimes your decisions are for more prestigious jobs, higher paying jobs, ignoring what is the effect it's going to have on my marriage, on my family, on my health. And maybe it's worth having less and not having as a significant, honorable, if you call it that, because really every profession is honorable, but something which people don't look up to as something special. But being able to spend time with your family, being able to spend time with your children, being able to raise your mishpacha, being able to take care of yourself. There are people who ignore themselves. They deprive themselves on a physical level, whether it's sleep, whether it's not eating right, whether it's exercise, whatever it is, because they're busy with this other thing. So ultimately, if you make a balance, and again, many people don't do this, but if they looked in hindsight, maybe they would make different choices. So you're at a place where you can still make those decisions and try to focus on what are the benefits and what are the negative results or consequences of the choices we make. Are we being driven by kinna, taiva, kava, these things? And if we are, how we can curb that and perhaps live a more fulfilling, happier life. So I think that's all tied up in this message. Again, I know, borrowing from the next sugya of kinna, taiva, kava, but I think it all comes together with this concept.